This is NPR for Idaho, and you're in tune with Idaho Matters. I'm Tom Michael. Sarah Centillis lives here in Idaho in the Wood River Valley and is an author, academic, and advocate. She was educated at Yale and Harvard and is the co-founder of the Alliance of Idaho, which works on immigration needs. Her book, Draw Your Weapons, was honored with the Penn Award for Creative Nonfiction in 2018. And her latest book, just published by Random House, is called Stranger Care, a memoir of loving what isn't ours. It's a very personal memoir of her navigation of the foster care system, both in Oregon and here in Idaho. Welcome to Idaho Matters.
Thank you, Tom. I'm so happy to be with you.
So your book, Stranger Care, begins with a personal portrayal of the intimate conversations about whether or not to start a family, to birth a child, to adopt, to foster, between you and your husband, but really also within yourself. What was your process to untangle this internal discussion?
Well, I think of myself as a strong woman who says what she wants and takes agency over her own life. But when it came to becoming a mother, I couldn't really admit that to myself for a long time, that it was my deepest longing to be a parent. And by the time I did admit that to my partner, I discovered that I was married to someone who is an environmentalist, and he thought that bringing another human being onto the planet wasn't the best thing that we could do, especially when there were 500,000, half a million children on any given day in the foster care system in the United States. Eric really wants to live in a world where we tend the earth, and I realized that I want to live in a world where we tend one another and tend strangers. So foster care became our common ground, the way we decided to grow our family. At some point, this question, do I want to be a mother? Do I want to have a baby? Do I want to have a baby? Do I want to have a baby? Shifted, and I realized the real question for me was, do I want to be a parent? And I didn't need to be pregnant to do that. And so this became the way that we moved forward as a family.
So these very ethical, personal reasons help guide you to become foster parents. And there's one mantra that is repeated as you become certified to do so, the purpose of foster care. What is that mantra? What is that purpose?
The purpose of foster care, at least in Idaho, is to reunify children with their biological families.
And obviously that plays into the story, that very stark definition of foster care and your entanglements with the state, with the biological mother, et cetera. So you started the journey in Portland before moving to the Wood River Valley, and there's probably a lot that was the same between that experience in Oregon and Idaho in terms of how they viewed foster care. What were the differences?
A lot was the same and a lot was different. I think the primary difference was me. When we were in Idaho, when we lived in Oregon, there were two social workers that were sent to our house month after month after month to interview Eric and me and to try to decide if our home was safe, if we were safe people to trust a child with. It's a very invasive process, but whenever I would complain about how invasive it was, Eric would remind me, they're trusting us with a child. It should be as invasive as it can be. This is the biggest thing you can ask someone to do, is to tend someone else's child and keep that child safe. So the social workers visited our house a lot more in Oregon than they ended up in Idaho. In Idaho, it's a much more streamlined process. But the training was really rigorous in Idaho. We did I think it's several weekends in Jerome. It's called Pride, and it's a required training for all foster parents to take. And what's interesting is the title Stranger Care comes from what Eric and I were called in the foster care system. We're known as non-relative care providers, or stranger care, which is such an alienating term for a very intimate task. But it's also the most beautiful thing we can do. If you think across religious traditions, the one thing we share in common is this impulse to be asked to care for the stranger, to care for the other, to care for those in need. And I think foster care allows that expansive sense of what counts as family, what counts as community, who we're called to be responsible for.
You're listening to Idaho Matters, and our guest is Sarah Centillis with a beautiful new book called Stranger Care. So you tell this story, and you did this also in Draw Your Weapons, you tell this story in vignettes, in these sub-chapters that can be very short. In my opinion, it's a very powerful tool. It helps move the story along with some punch and power and emotion. And to give the reader just an example of this, here is one complete sub-chapter, if you don't mind me reading it. Trash bag. When children in the foster care system are moved from home to home to home, They are given a trash bag in which to carry their belongings. That's it. One sentence. Why structure the book this way?
I write in fragments, so that's part of it. But on the whole, this is such an intimate story. You know, it's the story of us, of Eric and me, of the two of us taking into our home a three-day-old baby girl that I call Coco in the book, and bringing her home from the hospital, and then what happens after that. And it's the most intimate book, most personal book I've ever written. But I also wanted that intimate story to open up into the wider world. So the vignettes that break up the story of Coco are stories about the natural world where strangers care for each other. You know, I think in the beginning, I was looking for evidence of an expanded sense of family in the natural world. And by the end of the book, I was looking to nature to take care of me in my grief and in the shattering that happens as the story progresses. I also like to use white space. So that chapter that you just read, that tiny chapter, most of that page is white space, because I like to point to the limits of my own writing. I like to leave room for everyone I write about to be bigger than what I'm able to say about them. I want Coco to be bigger than what I can say about her. I want her mother, Evelyn, to transcend what I'm able to capture on the page. And so that white space is a way to both invite the reader in, to give the reader a breath, to allow the reader to make connections between the material that I present. And it's also a way to point to the limits of language. I'm a theologian by training, and I've been trained in how to write about what can't be captured on the page. And so I tried to show that by leaving room and empty space so that you can see that there's more to everything that I write than my ability to capture them.
What's amazing, it really does point to that pacing. And as you said, you do bring in religion. It's in your training. You bring in nature. And also in the book, you have moments right here in Idaho, these small moments, we would call them, where you find others, you just random encounters with others who are adults who have had excellent experiences going through the foster care system themselves. These were so surprising. Were they surprising to you?
Very surprising to me. I mean, the beautiful part of living in a small town is everyone fell in love with our foster daughter, Coco, and everyone knew what we were going through. But then I'd have these moments of encountering strangers. For example, I think maybe one you're thinking about is in the grocery store. I had Coco strapped to my chest in one of those baby carriers, and I was checking out at the local grocery store, and the woman behind the cash register said, "Oh, what a beautiful baby you have." And I said, "Well, she's actually my foster daughter." And sometimes when I said that, people would kind of step back, this idea that I might have to return this infant to her biological mother is a scary thing for people to wrap their minds around. Although, you know, it's what we do whenever we love a mortal. Someday we're going to have to give them back. That's part of what it means to be human, the risks we take with big love. But in this case, the woman said, "Oh, I was raised in the foster care system." And then she looked at me and she said, "The good homes make all the difference." So in the middle of this grocery store in the lunch rush hour, the two of us were kind of standing there crying in this profound connection of being engaged in the same enterprise. What does it mean to take care of other people, and who's going to do that work?
The book is called Stranger Care. The author, Sarah Centillas, and an honest and searing portrayal of your journey. You know, at one point you juxtapose a nonprofit you started. It's the Alliance of Idaho. Supports immigrants on their path to citizenship with your plight as a foster parent. So the context here is, as you recall, migrant children being separated from their parents at the U.S.-Mexico border. And you talk about signs that a lot of our listeners can envision right now. They see these in front yards. They say, amongst other things, families belong together. And that was, you almost had to read that, or your father did, in a new context in your current role as a foster parent for an undetermined amount of time.
Yeah, I had one of those signs in my front yard because I help run the Alliance of Idaho, which protects the human rights of immigrants. And it was during the time that's ongoing of family separations. And my dad saw the sign in my yard and said, "I think maybe you should take that down when the social worker comes over." Because the contrast between what's happening at the border, the way that kinship and blood ties are just ignored, you know, infants taken out of their mother's arms, children separated from their parents, children in cages. What was happening in the foster care system in Idaho was this real emphasis on reunification, keeping families together at any cost. So it was that idea of families belong together became a question for me. Which families? Who decides? What counts as families? How do we create a culture where all families are welcome, all families are supported to stay together? I think once a child ends up in the foster care system, all of our social services have failed at that point. You know, it's a result of structural poverty, of the fact that it's not easy to get access to rehab, good rehab for addiction, that we don't have affordable housing, that we don't have safe places to live. So all of these, we don't have a pro-family community. And so when these structures that are supposed to support us break down, that's how families end up in the foster care system. So I think the real question is, what do we do to help families stay together? Is foster care the only way to do that? And what happens when a family is white and enters the foster care system? What happens when a family is Latinx and enters the foster care system? What happens when a family is African American and enters the foster care system? Are those experiences the same? Or is there some structural racism that's shaping people's experiences of foster care as well?
And those questions, even those ethical questions, just course through the book and make, for example, me as a reader, question on how I would respond. And Sarah, I understand you may not be able to go into any detail, but since the time of the publication of this book, are you still getting current information about the life of this child?
It's very complicated. It might deserve its own book. And there are some things I'm not allowed to say, but she is back in foster care in a different state. And recently, Eric and I have been allowed to Zoom with her. So we get to see her on Thursday mornings, which is such a beautiful, heart-opening experience, although when the screen goes dark, it feels like losing her all over again. But she is well cared for and safe at this point, and Eric and I are still working to try to bring her home. Mm.
And this book had specific resonance for a friend in Portland, for example. What advice do you have for any couple or family considering expanding or starting a family in the foster care system?
I think if you've ever thought, oh, foster care is something that I want to do, I really encourage you to do it. I think sometimes when people read my book, they think maybe I'm going to be anti-foster care because it was such a difficult, heart-shattering experience. But we need more foster care. We need more foster parents. We need more court-appointed special advocates. We need more people and more eyes on this system that tends the most vulnerable among us, these children that have been taken away from their parents, children who've done nothing wrong to deserve what's happened to them. So I think if that's something that your heart has ever said, this is something I'd like to do, please do it. We need you. These children need you. People would say to me, oh, I've thought about being a foster parent, or I've thought about adopting, but I've always wanted a child of my own. And the thing I learned as a foster parent is that these children belong to all of us. They are ours. They belong to us already. And so I think you can tell a lot about a community by how they take care of the most vulnerable among them. And right now, the most vulnerable are children in the foster care system.
Well, it's a powerful new work with a lot of resonance. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for talking with me today, Tom.
We've been speaking with Sarah Centillas, author of Stranger Care, just out from Random House. Up next, nanotechnology, quantum mechanics, photons, entanglement. You can listen as we struggle to understand a researcher at Boise State University who is preparing us for a brave new future. This is Idaho Matters.